Nau Razali, a volunteer interpreter helping the New Zealand forces in the Bamiyan province in Afghanistan, spent years trying to come to New Zealand. It was always refused. Last August, as the Taliban swept to power, he finally emerged from hiding to catch the long-awaited flight to safety. The day suicide bombers and gunmen killed dozens at the airport, evacuation flights ceased, and Nauroz went back into hiding, until at last he managed to get out in October. The details must remain undisclosed for obvious reasons. He's out of MIQ now and awaiting resettlement.
First of all, I would like to, before moving on to my current situation, I just wanted to, would like to say that I have got my first dose of vaccine yesterday.
Good.
COVID has been, it's been a hot topic here in New Zealand. Also, I would like to acknowledge that New Zealanders have been, suffering a lot because of the COVID. They have not seen their loved ones for months and are struggling to do so. And they are having, they have not been evacuated here because of the lack of MIQs. So I can put myself in the New Zealanders' shoes. I was evacuated. However, I was evacuated because to New Zealand, because I was, the main target and I was in severe danger. And now I am living in Auckland. I'm quite happy, excited, looking forward for a good life in New Zealand.
You're awaiting resettlement at the moment, are you? What do you anticipate is going to happen?
At the moment, I'm in Auckland, staying at the immigration facility. So it may take a while, several months, so that I could be resettled in New Zealand.
Where do you want to go?
I want to stay in Auckland because I'm looking forward to, for educational opportunities and most importantly, working opportunities. So I'm looking forward to do my master's because I preferred to do it in New Zealand because I was supposed to do it in Afghanistan and also in one of the other countries, but I chose to come here. I'm looking forward to do it in here. And I can't wait for that.
What will you do it in? What will you study?
I'm planning to do Master of Sociology or International Relations because I already did my bachelor's degree in sociology and that's why I'm planning to do my further studies on that.
Anybody who heard about your situation in Afghanistan and your struggle to get out as the Taliban bore down must understand the stress you've been living under. What is it like now?
It's been quite difficult. Kim, I had tried a lot to get to New Zealand. I tried in 2015, 2018, 19, 20. So it's been a long journey. As soon as I found out that my application was being considered to be resettled in New Zealand, I decided to move to Kabul from my hometown, which the New Zealand Defence Force, the PRT, Prevention and Construction Team, were there. Because, first of all, I had worked for the military and I was the main target there. The people in the community knows me quite well. That's why I decided to move to Kabul. Secondly, it was exactly August 13, which I moved to Kabul. And on the highway from Bangan to Kabul, I see Taliban, they were heavily armed. They were laughing together, making jokes and a smile. On the other hand, I saw Afghan National Security Forces, which were desperate, hopeless, and feel being betrayed. So I went directly to one of my friend's house and stayed there for a couple of, nights. And then, the next day, Kabul fell. I was terrified, panicked, very scared. Not only me as an Afghan youth, but also thousands of Afghans never thought it could happen. So Taliban were somehow, heavily armed on the streets and they were patrolling everywhere. Then in August 26th, I got to know that my visa was issued. So I was somehow relieved and suddenly starting raising all of my social media account for the time being, because I had fear of being checked in checkpoints. And after that day, I and some of my other colleagues decided to go to the airport to be evacuated. So we went there, we witnessed heavy gunfire, crowds of people and chaos in the airport. We have tried every airport doors, but weren't successful at all because there was no foreign soldiers. And then after an hour, we departed the area. And then after an hour or so, we came to know through the media that an explosion took place, killing 100 Afghans and 13 Marines. And at the end of the day, I was desperate, hopeless, spent days and nights on hiding, you know. It was very tough and risky. So finally, I had made some contacts with Mafat, and I was evacuated to one of the Middle East countries and into New Zealand. It's been a very quiet journey. It's been a very quiet, tough, you know, how it's tough it's been.
So do you still, my question was, I suppose, do you still suffer from that stress?
I still do suffer a bit when the door slams. I just suddenly get up. When I hear, you know, something in the city, a very loud sound, I just suddenly, you know, it's scared. So it's still suffering, but it may take time for me to recover.
Are you getting help with that?
Yeah, there are definitely. I have been supporting. You know, there are doctors in here, which I have been here. So they are quite good. Most people, I have been getting support from the people here.
The reason that you wanted to come to New Zealand in the first place, you said you started applying for residency in 2015, was because the Taliban was growing stronger at that point. But did you ever anticipate that the Taliban would take over completely and so quickly?
One of the reasons that I wanted to come to New Zealand, because I had, you know, I was engaged with New Zealand, I had worked there, I was photographed by the Taliban, the whole community knows me that I was there, I had volunteered there. So I was the main target, as the other interpreters were in 2013. So this was something, a loophole, and that's why I tried in 2015 to come to New Zealand and resettle, because I've completely felt, you know, in danger. I never thought, especially, that Afghanistan would fall one day again, because I thought that there could be some kind of power sharing so that everyone could see them, you know, in the power, the minorities, and most importantly, all the leaders who have been engaged in Afghanistan in the last 20 years, because there was somehow Afghan intra dialogue have been, you know, took place for around 1.5 years or so. But we have never thought that the Taliban would come again to the power, because they were toppled again. They were toppled once in before 2001. And that's why the international community came in to have a free and democratic society. Free media, giving rights for women, education, access to technology, rule of law, good governance. And we were moving very good. Everything was quite good. But things got worse, you know. Security situation were deteriorating. Districts after districts fallen, province after the province fallen. The general public, including me, we never thought it would happen. It was a shock for us.
Does it seem to you that the last 20 years and the efforts to contain, overthrow the Taliban by forces, including the NZDF, have been a waste of time? Has it all been for nothing?
No. That's not been the case. We, as a youth and the people of Afghanistan, who have been brought up in the last 20 years, we really appreciate you know, the ISAF prisons, the NZDF prisons, because this was an opportunity for us that we could move forward to have a better future, to have a good education, and to be, you know, looking forward in the future. For example, the provincial reconstruction team, the NZDF, they have provided and maintained security across the Banyan province. They have implemented, you know, thousands of projects, developmental projects, roads, bridges, schools, health clinics, and schools across the Banyan province. This also applies in education. For example, in 2003, in Banyan province, there was somehow 50 students, whereas in 2012, it was, you know, like 2,700 students graduated. And by the end of 2009, which I was teaching English for academic purposes there, 3,000 students were graduated on a yearly basis from Bamyan University. There also, you know, this also applies on governance, rule of law. The youths, the women, they had opportunity, you know, they were employed in civil service, they were employed in governments, they were employed in government facilities. So this was not a waste at all.
But all this has gone now. The Taliban is sweeping all this away, and people like yourself, the educated people, are fleeing.
For example, I could be one of the examples in the last 20 years. I went to school. I graduated from school in 2011. Then I went to do my bachelor's degree in sociology. My brothers and sisters are doing now, my siblings. So one of them are doing, you know, his journalism studies, his last year. My sister is doing her biology studies. This is one of the examples of achievements which has been made in the last 20 years. 16 of my classmates had already done their master's, and one of them are doing his PhD. He's going to doing his PhD at Tehran University. This has not been a waste at all. With reference to your question that why they are feeling it's been, you know, for nothing. Well, because we feel that we will not have any place here in Afghanistan anymore. We would be the target. They are not allowing women to educate themselves. They are not allowing women to protest. They are not allowing women to go to school, to attend to the media, to have a free speech. That's why everyone wanted to get out of Afghanistan, because at the end of the day, especially for us who had worked for the military, we were the main targets, and we would be killed and we would be over. This also applies to the former government staff, and not only me, but other thousands of Afghans who had worked over the years. That's why we wanted to get out of Afghanistan, because it's about our life.
Can you explain why you started working on a voluntary basis? And I think the fact that you were not paid was a complicating factor. But why did you get involved with the NZDF in the first place?
I have told you earlier that I welcomed the New Zealand presence in Banyan province because they were here to, you know, to be helpful for us. It was a good opportunity for us. That's why I decided to join, you know, to become a volunteer to accomplish the mission efficiently, to be part of the free democratic society, to be part of, you know, a society that I could be part of the development, so I could have my own role in myself. That's why I decided to join, you know, to become a volunteer, to be part of it and improve my society.
If you had been paid for your work, would it have been easier for you to gain residency in New Zealand?
I think there was somehow a loophole for this because back in 2013, the government decided that they would have resettled those who got paid. So, but the philosophy was not being paid or not being paid. The philosophy was trade. The philosophy was to be engaged there. The philosophy was being around, seeing around by the Taliban. That was the case. So I don't know why the government at that time, you know, decided to offer or resettle specific people. It was, and I did it voluntarily, and I'm very proud of it.
I'm talking to Nawroz Ali, who was a volunteer interpreter with the NZDF in Bamiyan in Afghanistan. He has finally managed to come to New Zealand, escaping the Taliban. I think you have 9 siblings. I think that 2 of your sisters and a brother, have they arrived here also?
Yeah, I do have 6 brothers and 3 sisters. They will be arriving in New Zealand. My 2 of my siblings and brother are on their way to New Zealand. So hopefully they will get here tomorrow by noon.
So 2 sisters and a brother coming here. What about the other 6 siblings and the rest of your family?
The others are, I have reached the immigration. They say that they do not meet the criteria because they are above 24. So I will see what can I do them in the future. So they are feel, you know, they're not feeling good at all because physically I'm here, but psychologically I'm with them.
Back in the 1990s, when the Taliban were growing stronger, your family was forced to flee your hometown and went into the mountains. What was the circumstances of that? Do you remember what happened there in the mountains?
I was like 7 to, you know, 6 years old, which we had to move to the mountains because the Taliban were massacring us, the minorities. In Bamiyan province, they have massacred 70 people from my own community, and also 300 people in Yakaulang district and the other province. We feared for our life. That's why we went to the mountains. And in the mountains, there was no life. We had to struggle. We had to survive. And we had to do every means to just survive there.
But how did you do that? I mean, did you have a shelter?
We had to seek refuge to the residence house, you know, the people that they were there. We went there one by home to another. So for a year or so, and we were doing it. We were relied on some kind of, you know, help from the international aid organizations, which they were providing for the people who were displaced at that time.
Such a precarious life you've had.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
And you are what, 28, 29 now?
28, 29, yeah.
Do you think New Zealanders can possibly understand what you've been through?
They can definitely feel me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because it's not only my story, it's also about the thousands of Afghans who suffered a lot, you know, during different wars, the Soviet, the internal wars, and then in the last 20 years. So it's been quite tough.
There are others still in Afghanistan who presumably helped the New Zealanders and indeed the Americans, are there?
Yeah, unfortunately, still there are colleagues in Afghanistan who have helped in different capacities,
working
in different
capacities. Are you in touch with them?
I am in touch with them. They are still having the same situation as I did. Still there in hiding. So hope that the government, you know, extract them responsibly and safely and orderly.
The Taliban, when it first took over, said that they were not seeking revenge.
Oh, that's not the case. They are doing it publicly on the media, but that's not the case because I have been in contact with my friends. They are doing it now, unfortunately, on secretly. For example, one of my friends who was working at the passport department, the Taliban intelligence were there, was looking for him. So as soon as he found out, he just, you know, ran away to one of the Middle East countries. That's how it's tough for them. It's not only for the government workers, it's also for the those who have were engaged with the ISAF and coalition forces. It's very hard.
What happens now to Afghanistan, Nowroz? Is it lost? Is it all over?
No, it's not over. It's not lost. There's a new regime here. But it depends if the international community, you know, somehow engage with them or, you know, put them in some kind of conditions so that they can meet. For example, they could form an inclusive government, which all parties could see them from every, you know, ethnicities, taking into account minorities, providing opportunities for girls' rights, education, free media.
That would be your dream, but given what
it's
we know,
given dream, given it's what, possible. The international community pressure them, you know, give them conditions, not to provide them the money which is froze. So that's possible if the international community, you know, not recognize them and not provide them the money. If they can do that, have their, you know, checklist, they can do it easily. But if they ignore it, I can see that in the long run, in a year or so, there's a possibility of a civil war because Afghanistan is a multi-ethnic society. Every ethnic would like to see them in the power, and no one can govern only one ethnic. And, you know, the Taliban Pashtuns, they cannot only govern the government because the other ethnicities, Tajiks, Hazaras, Uzbeks, they have been part of the society for centuries, and they need to see themselves in the government. So if that does not happen, there would be some kind of, you know, chaos or civil war because the regional powers, the Afghanistan borders, international players, every one of them have got their own interest. And that interest lies within the specific ethnicities. So it's a complex situation.
It's very complex, and it's always been the issue with Afghanistan, hasn't it? That the warlords have wielded power.
Yes. So, you know, the warlords back in 1980, they somehow were supported by the Pakistan, by the United States. They got to power, and then they had started their own internal war. And that was because of, you know, they did not make an agreement within themselves. They did not form an inclusive government, taking into account all parties. That's why the internal war took place. And this happens this time with the Taliban. If they do not take into account all the parties which have been engaged in Afghanistan, so it is likely that we could have a civil war in the future too.
Can you explain to me, you are Hazara, Hazara are an ethnic group which has faced persecution in Afghanistan in the past. What does it mean to be Hazara? How does it signify to you being Hazara?
I'm very proud to be a Hazara. Hazaras have been, you know, persecuted over the last 200 centuries in Afghanistan. They were recognized until 2001. Until 2001 came into Afghanistan, you know, the international community came to Afghanistan. Hazaras were the only, you know, ethnic in Afghanistan to, you know, use the most to educate themselves, to go to schools, they went to universities, they went to do their PhDs, their master's degree. They had attended in mass gatherings and in public gatherings, and most importantly, in civil society activists. They were the main, you know, they were the people that international, you know, security assistance force welcomed them very high. They were the people that had the largest presence in the last 20 years in terms of governance, in terms of, you know, I mean, in civil activities, not in the employees in the government, in civil activities, being a good citizen, educate themselves, being fully responsible. So that's how the Hazaras have been. They are tough workers. They try hard. They try to educate themselves because they have been, you know, somehow deprived for centuries.
Are most of the Afghan people who've come out in the wake of the Taliban takeover, I think you came out with over 30 others, are they also Hazara?
Most of them have worked with the guy with the NZDF funded projects, like solar panel projects, agricultural programs. They are mostly Hazaras, yeah, because in Bamiyan, 90 to 95% of people are Hazaras.
Do you miss home, or are you glad to have escaped? Was it home for you? So troubled was it?
To be honest, I definitely miss home because I have grown over the, you know, 28 years. I have spent 28 of my years of life there. So I definitely miss my home, but I had no choice. I had to leave to come to New Zealand.
What about your parents?
They are apparently in Kabul. They are not staying in Bamiyan at the moment. So they are in my mind, that was.
Do you think that there's any possibility of them returning to Bamiyan?
I didn't think so there would be a possibility because of me that I had worked. So I'm trying to get them out of Afghanistan. So I will see what options I could, you know, be available for them.
I sense that you might feel in some way guilty for putting them at risk.
I feel that, yeah.
And you want to make it up to them, obviously.
Not up to them. I will try my best to get them off, get them out.
What do you think your chances are?
My chances, I will try first New Zealand. So talk to the relevant authorities if that's possible. Reach out to the government officials if they can help me. So because I stood with them, it's not only about me, it's all about my family too. That would be a chance.
It's very good to talk to you, Naraz. I wish you well. I hope that your future becomes clearer and more comfortable.
It was an honor to talk to you. So I just wanted to take the opportunity that the people who have, you know, who have been working tirelessly 24/7 in extracting me from Afghanistan, they are volunteers, the ex-service members, the current chain of commands, the people who are in the army, they are working 24/7. In New Zealand to extract allies from Afghanistan. I would like to appreciate them. Also, I would like to appreciate the government for providing me safety here, accommodation and housing here.
Well, eventually. I mean, I'm sure you don't want to say it. Could have happened more quickly.
Yeah, things are not going to happen quickly. So everything is, you know, it has got its own hierarchy. So it needs to go to different channels. I'm quite happy that I'm here in safety.
We're happy too. Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
It was an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
That's Naraz Ali from Afghanistan to New Zealand.